they say we should have known better than to fall so deep down into this rabbit hole we found.
Welcome to another edition of Down the Rabbit Hole Newscast, where our crew of Monday morning InfoSec quarterbacks discusses the important events affecting enterprise security and provides their unique analysis and perspective. And now, James Jardine, Michael Santarcangelo, and the White Rabbit, Rafael Los.
Okay, folks, welcome to another edition of the Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. This is Raf. We have a newscast. It's March 21st, 2017, episode 237, rolling right along. Coming to the end of March, and as you're listening to this, I am making my exit out of the Great Midwest back home down to Atlanta. So it's a crazy week. Hopefully yours isn't so insane. Speaking of insane, Michael, James, how are you guys?
That was the best intro yet. I got nothing more to say except for yes.
All I can say is I'm glad I'm not the one making a move cross country.
You know, I paid an insane amount for movers to come pick up my stuff, pack up all the things that I don't want to pack. I asked them if they could shrink wrap the twins and put them in a box and ship them. They said no, they're not allowed to move humans. So I guess I have to do that ourselves. I'm joking. Stop with the you can stop the angry tweets now. It was a joke. They're gonna be sedated and put on a play. No, joking. Anyway, all right. Let's move this along because I'm going to get some hate mail. All right, guys. So it's almost April. End of quarter, first quarter of 2017 is approaching. And the cost of cybercrime is huge. It's tremendous. It's monstrous. Wait, what?
It's probably devastating.
It's
it's crippling.
It's less than it's about 0.5% of the global economy.
Oh, sure, give it all away. There was a build up to this, Raf. We were going to do a build up to this. I'm going to try to build it up, but now you've given away the punchline. Look, here's the thing. We keep seeing these headlines of how horrible everything is. And we see that. When will people pay attention? Nobody cares. It's on the rise. It's horrible. What can we do? And there was another headline that went across, over the last couple of days, and it said, "Hey, it's $450 billion due to cybercrime." That was as a absolute number. I mean, that's big, right? Our brains cannot fathom that. It's some number that's like big. Okay, cool. And so as a result, we go, "Oh, that's a billion. That's bad." By the way, I mean, what's the difference between $440 billion and $450 billion? Don't say $10 billion because I know that, but like, I don't know what the impact is. So what's interesting is we use that as two things, a sign of, oh, the bad guys, they're winning. I mean, they're beating us, man. We got nothing. But, you know, the thing is, I looked at this. I was on a panel a couple years ago where somebody said, okay, global shrinkage. That's the nice way of saying theft in the retail sector is hovering around 1.5%. What do we do about it? Everybody else is like really like pained expressions, like all these ideas. I go, nothing. Next. People are like, what do you mean nothing? I'm like, 1.5% shrinkage? That's awesome. Next. And so I thought the right question to ask here is not why are the criminals doing so well? Why are we losing? It's the how does this number compare relative to the global economy? So I looked it up. You know, simple Google search. Turns out in 2014... the nominal economy globally was like $78 trillion, give or take. So what that means when it's nominal, it means it's not adjusted for inflation. It's not adjusted for all sorts of other things. It's basically just saying if we stacked up all the bills in U.S. dollars, it'd be like $78 trillion. So then if you understand math or if you have, Siri and you just say, Siri, calculate this out for me. It comes back and it tells you that we're talking about 0.57%. So it's 0.5%. And that's by the way, that's comparing the dollars, $450 billion today to the 2014 nominal number. I didn't yet find anything newer and I really didn't go searching for it because I went, wow, we're talking about 0.5 percentage point. So here's why I think this is important and I think what it means. And I'm going to start with the good news. We're doing a great job. It means that even though these things are on the rise, that our economy is also expanding, and we're keeping this to less than a, you know, or around a 0.5%. I know we like to dwell on our failures. Guys, we're doing a great job. And so here's the thing that some people looked at. Wait, so you're saying security doesn't matter? No, I'm saying the exact opposite. Security totally matters. And take a moment. Pat yourself on the back. Seriously, if you need to press pause, press pause. Pat, you're part of this. You're contributing to this. The questions you're asking, the decisions that you're making, the way that we're expanding security in the support of the business. Right? Because if you're listening to this program, then you're a business-minded security professional, or you're a business person who's interested in security, you are part of the solution. And that's the reason that that number is so low. Now, on the flip side, what's the harm then of running around and quoting that number and using it as doom and gloom? Someone like me is going to sit there and say, so you're freaking out over 0.5 percentage point? Okay. So I started to put it into this kind of a context. How many minutes are there in a day? I put you guys on the spot, but you've had enough time and you saw the show notes. How many minutes are in a day? Did you guys do the math yet?
A few.
1,440 minutes are in a day. And this works out to 8 minutes out of that total. And so at one point, I think it's okay to look at that and go, well, 8 minutes, that's a lot of time. No, it's not. We waste more time on that just checking Facebook to see if anybody liked our cat pictures. Okay, so, but let's go ahead. So then out of an hour, how long is that out of an hour? It's 20 seconds. It's 20 seconds out of an hour. The amount of time to sneeze, basically.
Right.
Is what we're talking about. So then the next logical question is, how much time would you be willing to spend to get that 20 seconds back? I mean, let's assume that you're really distraught over losing 20 seconds of an hour. Okay, cool. Or 8 minutes out of your day. Well, is it worth spending 20 minutes to get it back? Maybe not. Now, can you make an investment that gets you back, you know, 20% of that time over the course of the next year, you know, compounded? Yeah. Oh, great. Then go focus on that. So I just wanted to put some of this stuff in perspective and say, look, I mean, it doesn't mean that we don't matter. It doesn't mean that things are bad. It just means keep in mind that absolute numbers versus relative percentages matter, and actually use this as a way to say, hey, we're doing okay. We're doing good. I think you're doing good. And I'm excited. And I'm excited to be part of it. And so, you know, is cybercrime on the rise? Of course it is. I'm still shocked. I think I've told you guys this before. I looked up one time. I was under the mistaken belief that we solved 70 to 80% of bank robberies. I mean, they're kind of like non-issues. And so I was like, well, it must be we just catch everybody, right? No, it's the exact opposite. 80% of bank robberies go unsolved. Oh, well, that's not what I expected. Okay, so there's still crime. There's still car accidents. Things happen. It's the world of risk. It's okay. It's not okay. It is. But when we look at this stuff, we're doing good, guys. Like, keep up the good work.
Well, so anyway. I think the danger of trying – I always – whenever somebody quotes stuff like that, I always think they've got some sort of agenda because, like, my first question is, all right, what are you selling me and how much is it going to cost me? Because, frankly, the one I saw over the – like either Thursday or Friday, and I can't find a tweet that somebody sent out. And I guess it doesn't matter because I don't want to berate the fella anyway. But it was about the fact that Home Depot agreed to a $25 million in debt in settlement with the banks, right? So they paid the banks that through this that 2014 breach they had. So $25 million plus that they are already agreed to pay out $134.5 million. So that's like $159.5 million, right, out of their coffers. And so somebody was using it on Twitter for fear-mongering. Clearly, look at all this money Home Depot has had to pay out, blah, blah, blah. So that number obviously gave me pause. And then I went, wait a second, I should look up what their annual revenue is. So I'm going to paste this link because Google Finance is amazing. So the annual the total annual revenue for 52 weeks ending in January 29th, 2017 for Home Depot. Anybody want to take a guess?
Well, I also looked it up, so my guess is probably going to be pretty accurate.
$94.595 billion. But, you know, things cost money, and that's just revenue. So their gross profit, $32.313 billion. And then there's operating expenses and blah, blah, blah. So they made – this is just net income would be, they say, before extra items, and I don't know what that means. So I'm not a financial person, but their net income is $7.957 billion. Now, let's go ahead and take that $159 million, subtract it from $7.957 billion, and it's – who cares? I don't want to be dismissive about it, but I looked at that and went, oh, my God.
Well, yeah. What? Listen, I had this – I had this back and forth with James Adamson on Twitter, and I pointed that out, and he said, yeah, but then somebody in security doesn't have a budget now as a result of it. I mean, the money had to come from somewhere, and doesn't that suck? Yep, totally sucks. In fact, this is why I would argue these are great conversations to have, because I think there's no argument that – well, hold on. I think there's a valid argument to be had as to – is it cheaper to have done this in advance and prevent something from going wrong than to try to clean up afterwards? And if the analysis is, yes, I could have done this reasonably, it was on my list, great. But what I've looked at, if you guys remember back, because I know we talked about this, in the wake of the Home Depot breach, there were a bunch of news articles that had – I used to work at Home Depot. And here's a list of the 100 and 237,000 things I told them that they should have done, and because they didn't listen to me, they didn't do any of them. Sure. Okay. So you wanted them to go spend $1 billion, but they got popped, and yeah, they've spent. I mean, we say they've spent $150 million. But they didn't. By the time this is all said and done, and the insurance riders kick in and everything else, it's far less than that. But even if they did, okay, from an operational perspective of the company, this proved nothing other than they're okay. They can withstand it. Now, can a smaller company handle that kind of that same sort of percentages? Percentages, maybe. But do those percentages work for those smaller companies? No. There's an advantage to being a global retailer. There's an advantage to having that sort of a scale. There's all sorts of stuff there that come in and start to matter at that level. But that's where we need to think about these things in a way that says, okay, so does that mean that we're not important? No. Now, does it mean that we need to be smarter about prioritizing where we place our efforts? Yes.
Right.
Well, do we need to understand some of these basic financials to have good conversations and to then advocate for the right things in the enterprise? Yeah. Listen, if you tell me you've got more than three priorities this year, like three hardline, like these are the things we got to deliver on, I'll tell you right now, you're setting yourself up for failure. And I know somebody right now, you're throwing something at the radio, you're screaming, but Michael, you don't understand. No, I totally do understand. If you've heard me say this a lot, if everything's a priority, nothing's a priority. If you go in and say, I want to do all these things, what they hear is, I don't understand anything you just told me, so I'm going to go ahead and not fund it. And you go, well, you just watch, there's going to be a breach, you could spend millions of dollars. And they're going, but we're making billions. Like, okay. I don't know what the hell you're asking me for. So we're good. So well, I think it's worth pointing out.
Yeah, framing this in terms of a – and this is why security is such an interesting topic and why I really enjoy this this field and what we do. And I think I'm glad that at some point somebody read me the Riot Act essentially and told me to get my head out of my own backside with respect to what I thought was security versus the business. And going back to this – the Home Depot example. So look Their total revenue has steadily increased since 2014. Their net income has gone from $5.385 billion in the week the 52 weeks ending February 2nd, 2014. The next year was $6.345. The next year was $7.009 and $7.957. The numbers are all positive. Every chart they have is trending upward. Where were all these customers that were never going to go back to Home Depot again? I'm moving back to Atlanta. I think I have Home Depot or like no choice because they own that market. It's their home market. I enjoy shopping at Home Depot because things are cheap and I can find them and they're all one place.
And if you're like me, there's certain things I go to Lowe's for. There's certain things I go to Home Depot for.
Right.
And both are, you know, more or less equidistant. If I need to run quick, I might run to Lowe's. It's a little quicker, a little easier to get into or out of. But this is the thing we talked about. Let's go back for a second. All right, so we got the Target breach, right? Catastrophic. Nope, my bad. Oh, but that proved the CEO is going to get ousted. The guy that did the failed expansion into Canada? No. Well, that proved the CIO is going to go, who held her position for 10 years with the average tenure in the industry of 3 years. Try again. By the way, did you guys see Brad left? Brad Murray.
I was talking to him last night about it.
I'm
actually working on getting him on the show, Brad Marino, he's now with Booz Allen Hamilton.
And based on his background and experience, I think that's a great fit for him. And I think he's going to be able to affect a lot of good changes. And I think bringing that experience forward is fantastic. All right. So what are the other big ones? So we had Sony, right? So Amy Pascal got the head of a new studio, which is what she wanted to do anyway. All right, Anthem. Anthem's one I haven't tracked really tightly, but as far as I know, they're still a going concern and providing people healthcare. I would say the only one of late that I think is materially interesting is Yahoo. But as somebody pointed out when I started asking these types of questions on Twitter, so the discount of like $250 million off of the total purchase price was a small percentage, like also not a big deal. And they go, oh, but Meyer got fired. Okay, first of all, that was a likely outcome. Fired. I mean, I think that's a harsh interpretation of it. Her position was eliminated. but also, she had a huge, like a $23 million golden handcuff severance package. I think the thing that's more interesting is she lost her bonus and she lost her stock allocation, and she spun it beautifully. Well, I think the good, hardworking people of Yahoo should split that up. Yeah, I mean, it just shows she's masterful, and that's great. And you know, it is what it is. It's fine. But the point is, I'm always leery. To your point, Raph, when somebody cites these, this is the proof. It's the plural of data the plural of anecdotes isn't data. It's a couple points. I think they're great conversation starters. I love them as what ifs. What if that happened to us? How would we handle it? How are we poised for that? And I think that those are great questions. But when you see these absolute numbers, and if you feel your blood boiling about stuff, go back, put it in perspective, and realize that you're actually doing a good job. And that collectively we're doing a good job.
I think we're doing as good a job as I think in a lot of cases. I mean, sure, there's companies where executives simply don't understand the value of security, and it is detrimental to business, and someday they'll get called on it. Okay, it's just that simple. But there's – for every one of those, I think there's probably 10 where the situation is either A, on the security side, we haven't been able to convey – the actual risk to the business because we don't understand the processes that are critical and the negative consequences and impact a security event would have to those processes. That's on us. And I think even more probably prevalent is the fact that somebody has looked at it and said, I get it. Your concern is valid, but it is not going to sink the Titanic. Let's acknowledge it, that it's there, and prepare for if and when it is going to happen. And if you're telling me it's 100% certainty, great. Let's go ahead and get all the things in place.
And let me bring James out of the shadows here for a second, because I think this is part of our daily exchange with each other, which is when we do these stunts, when we go live with this research, when I publish it, when I'm going to force somebody's hand, I think it's fairly predictable that one of us always says, at the peril of what? At the expense of what? Was that the best choice for the organization? James, is that fairly accurate for how we start our day? Like most people say good morning, and I think we swap stories and go, can you believe this?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure most of our iMessages start off with, can you believe this nonsense? We see it all the time. And what we get out of these headlines and what we get out of everything about, what we would classify as our media hype and all this other nonsense we got is, we have to take the time. Don't take everything face value. Take the time to actually dig into it and look at it, because these headlines are typically so misleading, right? They get a point across. Doesn't mean it's the point across, but they get a point across. But if you actually read into it and start looking at things, then you actually start getting a picture of what's happening. As I listen to you both, talk through your sides of everything going on, it's amazing how we look at stuff and people don't, dig into it and find out. They look at the headline and they say, it's, billions of dollars, but then you put it in perspective and it's not, and Raph, you and I talked about it on the last newscast, talking about like the AWS outage and, that type of stuff, where when you actually put it into perspective of, what does that actually mean? We still don't fully understand what do we consider acceptable risk? you know, I mean, I guess we're still kind of learning that as we go, but we see so many things come out, you know, everything, you know, we talked about this, everything is devastating. I mean, it's going to destroy the world. Everything is so serious, but when you actually take the time to look at it and you think about it, you know, $460 billion across how many companies globally,
right?
You know, how many people globally does that actually affect? And then go take that and do your own research. Look up and see, what's it look like when we just look at credit card fraud? You know, how much do we lose? How much does credit card fraud itself cost the global economy? You know, and then, you know, compare those numbers. Are we similar in percentages that way? You know, it's really understanding that stuff. And I'd love to know, you know, I mean, in here it has that quote, right? Cybercrime costs the global economy over $450 billion, over 2 billion personal records. Alone, over 100 million Americans had their medical records stolen. But when you look at that number, where does that number come from? What are they building that up with? Is that including legal fees? Does it include things like when Raf's talking about Home Depot, the amount they have to pay in PCI type fines, the amount they pay to consumers, the amount they pay to banks, the amount they pay for cyber? Does all that make up those costs, or are we strictly talking it costs consumers this amount of money?
Yeah. So you guys, James, you brought up an interesting point, because every time somebody is sitting here quoting me huge numbers and big losses and stuff, in the back of my mind, and you get, please don't laugh, this is just the way my brain works, Marvin Martian is saying, where's the kaboom? There was supposed to be an earth-shattering kaboom. Like, where's the so what? I had a manager at one point that taught me that every single time I would bring him some critical thing, this is part of my education into getting into the leadership positions I've been graced with, and every time I'd bring up something that I thought was earth-shattering, he'd go, so what?
Yep.
And I'd stand there and stare at him and go, what do you mean, so what? He goes, okay, so what? What if I'm going to take this to the CEO right now? What's the so what? And I would say, well, then, you know, this patch was missing on this critical server. He goes, great, so what? I go, so it could get hacked. He goes, so what? And he'd kind of do this to me. And eventually I came back. I stopped coming to him with everything. And I learned that I'm going to only bring things to you that actually have a material impact. I learned to talk to a lawyer, and I learned, you know, what material impact means.
Yep.
But I don't think enough people know that. And so Marvin Martian, and I'll do my best Marvin Martian impression, where's the kaboom? There was supposed to be an earth-shattering kaboom, right? You've got Marvin Martian in the back of my head saying, come on, what's the so what?
Well, yeah, and so, all right, so what I find interesting then is that some people say, oh, so you're saying we're not going to take this seriously till somebody dies. Nope, but just so we're clear, totally not saying that and not wishing that. What I think what you're looking at is accurate. And let's be fair for a second. Most of us, I mean, when I got started in tech and in security, right, this was long enough ago that it was an accident, and I was told I was limiting myself, and it was a career, I was never going to go anywhere, yada, yada, yada. But my welcome speech on my first day was, all right, new guy, welcome, you're part of the tech team. Here's the way it goes. If you do a good job, nobody's going to care, and if you screw up, the whole world is going to come crush you. And so my advice to you is don't F up. All right, man. Good luck. If you got questions, let me know. And I kind of like – it was like one of those things where you're like, that's profound. Holy shit, that's probably true. Okay, but it's also profound. Okay. And you just – you know, it's good. And by the way, what have we seen over the years? Somebody's head is going to roll. Somebody is going to demand. I mean, the thing that's fair in this is there is a certain hysteria that happens every time there's a breach, and it always turns around. Well, who should have prevented this? Why did this happen? And sometimes the answer is because there's bad people and they do bad things because they're motivated. Because if you look at that percentage, it's really low. But if you're one of those criminals and you can tap in and you figured out a way to make a couple $1 million a year tax-free and you don't get caught and you're doing something that you enjoy, I mean, we can talk about the ethics of it anytime you want. Cool. Well, then that's why people are doing it, and that's why they got in. And I, you know, there's no such thing as perfect security, not in functionality, but it doesn't have to be. Like that's kind of the point. And what I'll tell you again, where I get excited is I take I limit now. I do 3 briefings a week, and what I found with a lot of the briefings is I'm talking to CEOs and executives that are getting it, and their clients are getting it, and they're saying, yeah, you know what? We don't have to protect everything, but we've got to be in alignment with the business. Cool. What are the 3 things that matter to the business? And so what we're experiencing right now is we're making that shift between, okay, This is a technology play, and I got to think about everything that could possibly go wrong. No, you didn't listen to me. I just told you that's going to go wrong. Oh, nobody listens to me. And being able to say, okay, there's a whole range of things. Let me go understand what's most important to the company, and let's make sure we're building security around that. And let's go make sure then that I've got some level of comfort that the things that matter most are the things that we're focusing on and protecting. And yeah, some of these other things, they might not work out okay, but it's okay. We're good. We can handle it. We're making that transition. It's not always smooth. It doesn't always feel comfortable to us, but we're making it. And what I'm telling you is the numbers are telling us we're doing okay. I mean, like, that's the flip side too. Look at the Home Depot, look at all these other settlements, and you're going, oh, they blew a lot of money. You could also look at it and say, that's it. I mean, there was this huge catastrophic earth ending breach, and that's it. Cool. Good. Then we're doing a good job. Well, we've got the right controls in place.
And this is one of those reasons why, you know, a lot of time we prefer, and there's a survey out that's right now that's telling us that people prefer experience over education, because experience teaches us what's, you know, what all this means and why it's important. And you can't educate yourself. You can't get a certification that tells you how to properly understand the context of what's going on and be good at those subtleties like we're talking about.
Yeah, So obviously, I think I've been fairly outspoken on how I feel about the so-called shortage. And you know what I think is interesting too is I've noticed a flurry of headlines. I think, guys, we've been pretty staunch on this for about 3-4 years now, and I've noticed a flurry of headlines in the last month going, maybe it's not exactly what we think it is. But here's where I think everybody's missing it, and why I brought this up, because I think this is honing in on it a little bit better. What are we hiring for? And so what I thought was interesting about it was it was doing this, and they said, you know what, experience is better than qualifications. And it doesn't matter. I don't matter if you're a college graduate. I don't matter. It doesn't matter to me if you got a degree. It doesn't matter if you got a certification. It doesn't. Can you do the job? We're good. By the way, and this is what they didn't ask, and this is where my mind instantly jumps. How can you tell? And how can you tell repeatedly? Because I actually, the more I look at this, the more I think the fundamental challenge that we face with this so-called hiring shortage, and it does not exist. And here's why it doesn't exist. The people I've talked to that run dynamic, powerful organizations that are aligned to the business, that understand what they do and understand what they need, have never run into a problem finding somebody who can do that or finding somebody with those skills and aptitudes that they can train into that position. So we see that. And Raph, you brought this up a long time ago, a couple years ago. Like, you know, we lack a systematic way to train people, bring them in. James, you're looking at that consistently in terms of, you know, we want better app security, but we're not integrating with the devs. We're not integrating with the testers. We're not integrating with the business analysts. And they're all perfectly capable of doing this, and they have bigger budgets, and this is their sole focus. Yeah, that's all part of it. But what I'm looking at is even more subtle. Okay, well, what's the problem you're trying to solve, right? I mean, look, people know when we talk about Straight Talk, right? The first question is, what's the problem you're trying to solve? But the thing that I've learned, and I've got some updates coming out soon, it's an outcome question. It's not – so people try to answer it literally and then check a box and move along. They go, well, I got to hire somebody qualified. No. You got to go a little deeper. What's the problem you're trying to solve? Like, what are you hiring that person for? What is it that they're going to do? The answer is not security. What specific function? How will they elevate, right? What's your specific problem, and how is it evidenced, and how is their experience going to elevate that to a point where it's no longer a problem, and how will you know? What does that success look like? You've got to be able to dig into that. And so it can't just be, well, I need someone who understands AppSec. I don't know what that means, because I'm sure James right now has got a list of 15 questions that he would ask you instantly to help you vector in on whether you actually needed that or not. And he wrote that great piece, well, it was a couple months ago, James, on, you know, the questions you really need to ask before you hire somebody, and the realization you might not need to hire anybody. So I just looked at all this and I went, yeah, this is kind of interesting. One more piece and then I'll take a break here is – they were split 50-50 on whether communication or technical was more important. Here's the answer, communication. Of the two, I've taught both for the last 20 years. It is far harder to teach somebody communication than it is to teach them a technical skill. I can take anybody and teach them a technical skill. And it doesn't diminish our technical skills. Look, some of the folks, especially some of you listening to this show, you're remarkable. You're in the 1% of skills. That's great. I'm not diminishing that. But what I'm saying is, for what we need, a technical skill is easier to acquire, easier to test, easier to practice, easier to use. Communication skills and leadership skills, let's not even go to leadership today. Let's just stay on communication. I can teach it. But it takes work. It takes discipline. It's like writing. It's like anything else. And so of the two, favor that one. You can, I can train the tech easier than I can train the communication.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I, you know, as you mentioned, I wrote that article a while back talking about, and as I'm now, you know, still finishing up preparing my presentation for InfoSec World coming up, you know, where I also talk about this, you know, is you have to understand what it is you're even looking for. I mean, you can't just come out and say, oh, well, it's the, you know, qualifications versus experience, but what are you actually trying to hire for? Because, you know, we so often in security, especially, we want these unicorns, right? That's why we always say there's this shortage, this gap in skills, because we're looking for somebody that can do everything, right? Somebody that can do code review, and they can do pen testing, and they can do threat modeling, and they can do policies and governance, and they can do phishing and social engineering. They can do everything. But how many people actually need that in the positions they're looking for? And so this is where we're falling down and saying, hey, I want to find the everything person, right? And so then, of course, we throw out there and say, well, I want, you know, a bachelor's degree, and I want this certification and that certification. You know, so if you've got all the certifications start with a G in front of them, you know, now all of a sudden you're qualified. But what does that actually mean when we talk about what are we going to do in our positions? Right. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, typically you have to be a little bit worried about somebody that has too many qualifications, because really once they get in your role, they probably aren't doing, you know, a tenth of that. You know, I mean, somebody that's, you know, certified in forensics and incident response and pen testing and auditing and all these different things, you're not going to bring them in to do all that. You're going to bring them in to do specific functionality. So that's going to hurt you as well if you do bring them in, because they're going to get bored and move on, right? But understanding that. But how do we get people up to that level, right? We say we want experience. How do we get that experience? You know, it was interesting. I was at a career fair.
Don't even get me started on that.
Years ago, and it was actually from a development standpoint. And it was at a college, and, you know, I'm walking around. And I talked to somebody else that was just getting their degree in computer science, and I don't have a degree in computer science or a bachelor's degree at all. But talking to them, I'm like, hey, how's it going? And they're like, well, you know, everybody wants to know where my certifications are. And I'm like, yeah. I said, everybody wants to know where my bachelor's degree is, right? And so that we never combine the two together. Both people probably great fit for most of those roles, right? But we have these gatekeepers getting us in, and then they want, on top of that, now we want experience, you know? And so from a development standpoint, a lot of people want to see, hey, what do you have? You know, what's your GitHub account? What are you doing on the side? What are the open source projects you're working on? And we do the same thing in security, right? What open source projects do you work on? Are you doing bug bounties? Are you doing this? Are you doing that? To be able to show some sort of capability to do the job. But we don't have an easy way to measure that. And, you know, I don't know as though all those are fair ways to judge somebody and say, well, if you don't do these, then you must not be any good at security. But it's something that we have to work out and understand. Experience is great, right? And somebody in the article actually mentioned something down in the comments about, you know, well, you know, here's the problem. You want somebody with 5 years experience, but nobody's being brought up to that, right? Like, how do you get 5 years experience? And, you know, some of the things that I've seen in some companies out there are, well, we just take somebody with less and we just say they have, you know, well, you're a senior now. Congratulations.
Yeah, and you've reminded me of an age-old question, right? Do you have 5 years of experience, or do you have 1 year of experience five times? And there's a marked difference between that. And so that's where, you know, and Raf, the work that you guys do, looking at the maturity of things and maturity models and understanding it, I think there's a real opportunity to start saying, so what does somebody who's new at this looks like? By the way, it's okay. We have to be new, right? Like, what makes somebody good at something? It's the reduction of error. We're going to make mistakes. It's how quickly do you realize it? Do you anticipate it? Do you recover from it? And I think you're right, James. I mean, it's we say, I want all these things. But what do you really want? Well, I don't know. And I don't think there's any. Here's the funny part. There's nobody to blame. You don't blame HR. You don't blame the industry. You don't blame recruiters. You stop and you look at it at some point. You got to take ownership and say, I need to go build a team. And if you want to go build a team that's going to perform at or above level, then you need to be very focused on what the team does, what you have on the team, what your role is, and how everybody fits. So I actually like stories like this, and I think that it shows that it's good. What I think it masks, though, is that then when you say that you want someone who has experience, you have to be able to discern who has experience. And what do you mean by that experience? What experience do you need? What do they need to come in with, right? Because I think what we've agreed to pretty consistently on the show is there's certain aptitudes. One of them is curiosity. Another is tenacity. If you've got those aptitudes and you've demonstrated ability to learn, there's a lot of stuff we can teach you. By the way, do you know how to teach people? James and I had a conversation before. We won't derail this, but we're talking about mentorship. And all I'll leave it with is we love that word. But it's kind of like saying there's a difference, you know, is there a difference between consulting and contracting? Yes, there is. You know, so what does it mean to be a mentor? Well, if you have to figure that out to be one. What does it mean to be a mentee? Oh, wait, you mean there's a responsibility to be a mentee? Yeah, guys, there is. And I think that's where, as an industry, if we can get our heads wrapped around it, we're going to put ourselves in a lot better shape. We'll see where it goes. One of the things we also talk a lot about, so I wanted to throw it out there, is cyber insurance. And I've thought about something. So we talk about cyber, right? In fact, James and I had a Twitter chat with a couple listeners the other day talking about different things. And it was talking about, what was it, James? One of the airlines had
It was one of the routers. A router went out.
Yeah, the router went out, so they filed against their cyber claim. And one of the listeners was very adamant that cyber can only mean security, and it doesn't. Now the interesting thing is, I've actually got a series that we just kicked off. I just kicked off today on cyber insurance, because what I realized is, you know, so insurance deals with perils. It's insurances have been around, right? Lloyd's of London. What is it? 300 years now. In insurance markets, not new. And if you look at classic insurance, so I'm the one, like, if like I won't name names, but some of the commercials on TV that talk about like car insurance, for example, my family now predictably knows that I will uncontrollably burst out at the TV. I mean, thankfully we don't watch TV anymore, but like, I'd be like, that's not insurance. That's not. Look, insurance is really simple. You have a risk and it is a high impact, but it's a low likelihood. So we always classically like to say a hurricane. Okay, cool. Let's say a hurricane. And so the idea then is that you can pool that risk and you can spread it out. So I'm going to transfer the risk that an individual holds, and I'm going to pool it and spread it out over a greater number of people on the likelihood that a hurricane will not affect everybody at the same time or even in any given year, which then means that if it happens to me, I can, depending on how I've structured it, I can recover some or all. And I've paid for that privilege, as has everybody else. And so it's a low likelihood but high impact. So the challenge then is we have this thing called security that we're all part of, and we have this thing called risk. And we certainly talk about risk and we talk about IT risk, but what I've also noticed is that a lot of organizations have risk organizations that may also deal with physical security, or they're a separate silo within the organization. And they tend to be the ones that deal with insurance. They tend to be the ones that deal with other measures of risk, including financial risk and other types of things. And so what you'll start hearing me say, I dub it one risk conversation. We've got to, in our organizations, get to this. But now what I saw in this, and I kind of liked it, was, and we need to do threat modeling. Now, we talked about that recently as well. And so just so we're clear, so you take security, which has a lot of confusion. You take risk, which has as much confusion. You take insurance, which clearly has a ton of confusion. And without delving into politics, the whole debate for the last 10 years on health insurance, that's not insurance. We're talking about something that at best could be co-insurance. And so we've confused it. We've completely confused the models. But by the way, now we've added threat modeling. Now, the oddity is, I actually like it. Like, I think it's great. The article in particular, though, it did say, you know, we're still struggling to calculate and manage risk from cyber. And then it was talking about, you know, insurance, and it actually was talking about hurricanes. And it's interesting because I live on the beach, and we had a hurricane skirt the coast this year. And I can remember here in Myrtle Beach, it was, okay, get ready. Oh, our bad, nothing's going to happen. And right as I said, our bad, nothing's going to happen, it actually stalled out on top of us. And although it was kind of like slow, like we watched these 100-foot trees just kind of like tip over. Really slow. It was slow. It was crazy. But that – they didn't get that right. And there wasn't, thankfully for us, a lot of loss of life or anything else. In fact, our whole state fared pretty well. But, you know, the thing is, we're not that good at predicting these types of things. And that's why they're high risk. And that's why we have an insurance marketplace. What's interesting is we're starting to see now more of that stuff come up. And so I'm going to put together a series. I've got a survey, 5 questions, 3 open-ended questions. I know this evokes emotion in our field. A lot of people think, in fact, James and I have been dissecting this lately. A lot of people on Twitter say, oh, well, I get it now. You don't care about security, so you're just going to get an insurance policy. That's not how insurance works. By the way, I'm not saying it doesn't happen in organizations. So here's the thing. Love if you could take 3 to 5 minutes, hit the link, tell us what you think about it. First of all, I'll promise right now, Raf James, we can talk about the findings on the show. Like, the cool thing about this is we can talk about it. It's not like, oh, it's uber secret. No, I'll share the findings. We'll talk about them here on the program. I got three experts. We're going to do one who understands it from the security perspective, one who understands it from the risk manager perspective, and one who understands it from the buyer's perspective, or the carrier's perspective, to kind of talk about how they look at it. Because I tell you what, I thought I knew a lot about how they built these insurance products, and I've learned that they go through a maturation process like everything else, and we're still early stages, but it's actually kind of compelling, the stuff that they're figuring out. And I remain robust that insurance is going to do more to shape the future of security than anything else that we're looking at. And I think it's kind of awesome. So I wanted to put that story out there to say, look, it's there, and think about it. In fact, the teaser, because I know this is going to come out in the series, a lot of your insurance policies, there's certain things that are included. There's certain things that are excluded. There's certain triggers, but there's certain benefits that you get too. So if you suspect a breach, you can get consults with responders, and there's all sorts of services that they can put in place for you that they've got on standby, that a call from them and you've got help in 24 hours. That's kind of awesome. So, you know, hopefully you're not a hater on the cyber insurance. And if you are, let us know, because we'll help you see where there's some benefits that you can exploit. So,
well, that anyway. I think that's interesting too, to think about, you know, how much from that perspective cyber insurance will bring to the industry, right? Because they don't want to pay these claims either. So, you know, something goes down, sure, they're going to start building up ways. They're going to have partnerships with, you know, vendors out there that something happens, they can send people in and really find out, hey, is this us? What happened? You know, and it's going to go beyond just, are we at fault? It's going to go much deeper than that. And, you know, I think that's going to help. It is interesting when you hear people, you know, just assume people just go buy insurance, you know, because they don't care about security. Like, wow, well, instead of doing security, I'll just get insurance. That'd be like saying, you know, instead of me driving safely in my car, I'll just go get insurance. Guess what? I still drive safe in my car. You know, I still don't try to burn my house down.
Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to afford your insurance.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly right. It's what they call the moral hazard argument, and it holds a little bit, but not a lot. Well, here's where my eyes were open. I was still thinking we were in those stages of if you want to do insurance. In fact, James, you and I talked about this on the business level. I was kind of shocked at how much the insurance marketplace has changed from a professional perspective for us in the last 8 to 10 years. 10 years ago, if you said I want E&O insurance for security, they were like, oh, yeah, no, we can't do that. Now they're like, yeah, sure, here you go. And it's very simple, and they ask a couple questions, and they know what's up because they've learned how to do it. So early on, we'd say, well, do you have this policy? Do you have these controls in place? Do you have this stuff? Yeah, no, they don't do that anymore. It's kind of like, and James, you and I talked about this. It's akin to them saying, okay, you reported on your form back that you have sprinklers in your house, and so that qualified you for this reduction. Awesome. Now, if you have a fire and you file a claim and they come and they learn that you, in fact, didn't have sprinklers, well, then that's not good for you. But they don't require you to jump through all these hoops ahead of time. But also, if you've gotten a home, even renter's insurance, they actually know where your house is relative to where the nearest fire hydrant is. They know what your area is rated. They know how fast the response time is. They know how many fires tend to happen in that area. They know all these different factors, and that goes into pricing it. And so where we're at in the industry is it's going to start coming down to, tell us about your business and who you do business with and where you do business, and answer, okay, cool, got it. We got your profile. Here's your price. Here's the products we can offer you, and here's the price for that. And the trick for us on the security side is going to be understanding the triggers, the inclusions, and the different things that we need to understand. And that's where we have an opportunity. So it's kind of a neat opportunity. We can change the language that we use. So there's one risk. So if we say something's a high risk, anybody else in the organization who's familiar with risk also knows it's a high risk. Now, there's some coming together. It doesn't mean we have to adopt somebody else's language. I always get leery when somebody says, oh, I got to learn to speak the language of the risk person. Or I got to, no, No. We all is one language. We just need to come to terms, and we need to have some clarity and some consistency in how we do that. And that's where I think we've got some really good opportunities. So we're going to start to see that this comes together. And we've been talking about this for years, right? We're still waiting to see some of the claims settled out, and some get meted out in court and some don't. And there's exclusions and all sorts of stuff. People are going to learn. But I don't know. I geek out on this stuff. I think it's fun. So stay tuned, I guess. It should be cool.
I hope so. There's a long road ahead of us, but I think we're, as long as we're able and willing to accept the fact that we have to mature, things will get better. The alternative is to continue to spin our wheels and be the lunatic standing there shouting that, you know, this is the worst thing that's ever going to happen, ever could happen, and it's already happening, it's happening right now, and people going, where's the kaboom? There was supposed to be an earth-shattering kaboom, and you don't hear it, right? So, anyway... I hope that's I hope my Marvin Martian voice entertained everybody.
I was thoroughly entertained. It was great. And I hope that you have a safe move. And I hope that you don't need to call on any of your insurance carriers.
So speaking of kind of funny. So when you move, they offer you they do it's like 60 cents per pound, right? For of things they move, 60 cents for every pound of stuff they move as an insurance. But you can buy an additional rider with for us an extra $260, it covers up to like some insane amount with a $500 deductible. And so I'm looking at this going, all right, we've got some heirloom china that's been in my wife's family for some time. They're transporting a car for me. There's enough electronics and computer equipment to fill a Best Buy. I think I'm going to take that extra insurance. And I'm looking at that $275, whatever, and going, is that worth it? And I just look around at my stuff and going, you know, odds are that $275, it'll just go away and all my stuff will arrive perfectly and I'll have no problems. But that's peace of mind for me, because if something happens, say that truck gets hit by a freaking meteor on the way down to Atlanta, all right? I don't want to be standing there going, well, crap, that sucked. Now what? So again, likelihood of things going wrong, fairly small, experienced movers, known company. What does peace of mind cost me? It cost me exactly, you know, $275.
Yeah.
So as you look at what you guys are doing, and Michael summed it up really well, as you look at what you're doing in security, what does peace of mind cost you in terms of not just, you know, your cyber insurance policies, but in terms of what you have to do to make sure that you've done the right thing for your company to make sure that business continues in the face of those, you know, inevitables sometimes, right? Those things you can't predict, but you just sort of have a hunch, you know, that they're going to come, and that means that you have to keep fighting for folks to do the bare minimum of things that we feel are the necessaries. If you don't have sprinklers in your house, it's going to be really hard to clean. You know, if you don't have a fire extinguisher and your homeowner's policy decides not to cover you when you have a house fire. Don't be surprised, right? So don't be surprised if your cyber policy doesn't cover you when bad things happen because you're not prepared. So anyway, we could go on like this, guys. But thanks for listening, everybody. It's been a pleasure. It is episode 237 of the Down to Secure Rabbit Hole podcast. It is March 21st, Tuesday, and I'm glad to have you with us, Michael James. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Oh, he took my line. Line thief.
Ah, there you go. Now you need a new one.
Pleasure is mine. No, I'm going to go to Chick-fil-A. My pleasure.
Thank you, guys. Have a great one. Everybody, thanks for listening. We'll see you on another Down to Secure Rabbit Hole podcast. Take care. So long. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Down the Rabbit Hole Enterprise Security News. Give us feedback on our website, podcast.whiterabbit.net. That's whitrabbit.net. Or on Twitter at White Rabbit, whitrabbit. Till next time, on behalf of our co-hosts James Jardine, Michael Santarcangelo, and the White Rabbit, Rafael Los, thanks for listening.